Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com and be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom. But please join us on Facebook also at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Good morning, day before Halloween. Halloween is now becoming politicized. It seems like everything is politicized. You know, I've been talking about this a lot, and I don't mean to bore you as my listening audience, but it seems like there's no escape from the right versus left argument. Everyone has a political opinion on everything. And now it's even come down to Halloween. And nobody can be civil or at least grow up about what they're seeing and the narrative. You can't even dress up as cowboys and Indians anymore because somebody's going to get offended. I was reading a story. I shouldn't say watching a story. Reading a story because it came up on my social media feed first. Then I saw it on the news. There was a gold medalist, three-time gold medalist. His name's Shaun White. And apparently, he had to apologize to the Special Olympics over his decision to post a picture of himself dressed up for Halloween as the character Simple Jack from the movie Tropic Thunder. If you remember this movie, Tropic Thunder, it offended just about everybody on some different level. It's the one where, the guy who plays Iron Man. He dressed in blackface, and there was another character who dressed up as, well, who was a character called Simple Jack. He was a mentally challenged individual. You know, just the fact that I have to use the word mentally challenged on this show, it's like nobody can take a joke. Nobody can accept calling somebody something. And everybody is like, oh, I'm offended. I'm offended that he dressed up like this character. Why? It's Halloween. Who cares? It's like no one can grow up. No one can take a joke. No one can accept that somebody finds humor in something. I mean, you take a look at the movie Blazing Saddles. Do you think that movie could be made today? One that pokes fun at everything from, you know, the color of people's skins to their attitudes. It pokes fun at rednecks. It pokes fun at blacks. It pokes fun at KKK, Nazis. I mean, it calls people all kinds of names. It uses all kinds of offensive language, makes all kinds of offensive and racially insensitive jokes. I'm tired of people being butthurt about everything. And everybody blaming somebody else. There was another story. It's like nobody can take responsibility for themselves. Nobody can take responsibility for their own actions. What difference does it make if he dresses up like Simple Jack? If you find it offensive, then you don't do it. Why do you gotta like make a statement and make everyone apologize? That's why I don't apologize for anything. If somebody doesn't like what they hear in this show, fuck them. Don't change the channel. You know, that's why I have to put the warning on. It's like, warning. There are adult themes here. We expect people to act like adults and accept that other people will have different opinions than this show. And if you don't like it, turn the channel. I was reading a story. And here's another story that comes across, you know, when you're going through news feeds from AP, Reuters, and things like that, and seeing what's going on in the world. Apparently, this 20-year-old woman choked to death during a pancake eating contest, which is, I mean, it's horrible, right? Somebody competing in a contest for Halloween or a fair and is in, you know, one of these eating contests, you try and eat as much food as possible, which I always found horribly funny, horribly disgusting, and an entirely stupid thing to do, because it's really not a healthy thing to just try and stuff as many things in your face as you can. And I want, before I talk about this story, I want to say, hey, man, I'm sorry if I'm going to make fun of this situation. You know, I'm sorry for this woman's loss and whatever. But you got to understand, it was a risky and stupid thing to do to begin with. Well, anyway, she's filed a lawsuit, or if I should say her family. She choked to death. She was eating pancakes. And apparently during the contest, she started gagging or whatever, and they couldn't save her. She was, they're suing the university and the fraternity that she was attending. And she's hoped, in the hopes of, quote-unquote, raising awareness of the preventable dangers associated with amateur eating competitions. Like, you don't know it's fucking stupid to shove a whole bunch of pancakes in your face? You don't know it's stupid to eat a whole bunch of chili peppers or a whole bunch of hot dogs or whatever it is the eating contest is? You know, they keep coming up with all kinds of wacky stuff to eat. The person, her name was Caitlin Nelson. She was participating in the Sacred Heart University's Greek Week. Reportedly began to shake uncontrollably, fell to the floor after eating multiple pancakes in a short period of time. Yeah. I remember there was a story, this is a while ago, about somebody who was in a water drinking contest at a radio station. And they were drinking water, you know, gallons of water to see who could drink the most amount of water. And well, apparently, yeah, of course, she got hydroencephalitis, which is when you drink a vast amount of liquids, your blood pressure rises and your water and the water in your body starts to accumulate because your body can't expel it fast enough. And if you drink enough in a short amount of time, you'll kill yourself. And that's exactly what happened. And she sued the radio station. And the two DJs who put on the contest were fired. Why? If you're going to, well, first of all, it was a stupid thing to do, because I know that if you drink enough of anything, you'll kill yourself. Same thing with eating. If you eat enough stuff, you know, like pancakes or hot dogs, you're going to kill yourself. It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of place, especially if you've never done it before, if you don't know to take precautions in certain ways, because professional eaters do take precautions and they know their limits and what they can do and what they can't do. They don't just suddenly eat a whole bunch of food. They know how much they can consume and how much of time because they're experienced with it. But put that aside a second. Nobody is taking responsibility for themselves. The only person responsible for choking to death on eating too many pancakes is the contestant. You have a responsibility to know enough not to eat 20,000 pancakes in a short amount of time. It's like the NFL and football players. They're constantly arguing and suing the NFL because of injuries. Well, the NFL should have known. The NFL did this. The NFL that. Well, what about you? I mean, you didn't know that you go out on a field and you see stars on every friggin' play, because I've played football before, and I got to tell you, tackle football, to almost every play, when you're in an injury or a situation, you see stars. You go and get knocked around quite a bit. You're pissing blood on Monday morning. Well, you know, if you do that on a routine basis, I mean, you got to be a fucking idiot not to know that. That's going to be damaging to your body, that when you're 50 years old, you're going to be hobbled. If you continually play beyond where your body can withstand that kind of punishment, you're going to be permanently injured. And these NFL players are saying, well, you know, they should have told me. They should have told me that when I had broken bones, torn ligaments, and took impacts at the speed of a freight train, you know, 15 times every Sunday, that I would be injured. Well, yeah, that's why we're paying you tens of millions of dollars. But nobody wants to take responsibility for themselves. Nobody wants to pay their own bills. Nobody wants to take responsibility for their health. You want to eat like a maniac, weigh 400 pounds, and then you expect society to pay your medical bills because you're permanently injured or disabled from your misbehavior? And really, that's what it's all about. And that, you know, today I promised you I was going to talk about Obamacare, and I will. But there were a couple stories that I wanted to cover before I talk about group health insurance in the form of government-sponsored health insurance, because you got to understand, my arguments against government-sponsored health insurance are based on the fact that we need to take more responsibility for ourselves and our own problems. We need to accept responsibility for a lot of things, and we just don't. Anytime anything happens, we blame it on somebody else. Even our misdeeds and misbehavior. Oh, the devil made me do it. Oh, so-and-so made me do it. Oh, well, I didn't know. It's always I didn't know. Main part of that is a failure of our education system. But also, it's like when we talk about this guy who was doing these explosive devices through the mail, and he was driving around with these stickers and whatnot. It's like, when I would go to these meetings and stuff, I'd avoid people like that because I knew, something not quite right. They're not right wingers. They're not conservatives. They're not people who are responsible. Right? I used to ban these people from Facebook. I could tell you, if I should show a screenshot of the people that are banned from Facebook on my Facebook page, my public page, it's about 200 names. There are a lot of people that you never see that I catch the comments all the way because I keep it up on one of the monitors as I'm working through the day, as I'm reading. Nobody's taking responsibility for themselves. It's like, you can't say things like that. You can't post things like that. I tell people this. You can't do that. You can't make those accusations. You can't accuse the president of being a racist or a child molester without some evidence, you know, and doing so, posting libelous or scandalous thing, that's an act of irresponsibility. You're going to get instantly banned. I don't support that, both right and left. And I want to talk about that because I'm seeing a lot of these stories about stickers on a van, and I'm going to explain how that relates to what we're going to talk about being dependent upon government, on expecting handouts and things to solve your problem, and expecting government to fix your problems when they're your problems, not society's. Because I got to talk about this because it really is connected. Let's take a break, and I want to talk about this argument on the stickers on the van and stuff. We'll be right back. And we're back. You know, everybody likes a funny meme, right? I post them all the time for laughs, for goofs, right? The memes about Hillary Clinton, the memes about Barack Obama, even about Donald Trump and whatnot. But there's a line that you have to go down. You can't do things which are libelous in some way or refer to obvious racially things. For instance, in the case of Roseanne Barr, when she made that tweet, you know, comparing Valerie Jarrett to an ape. That's not productive. That's not funny. It isn't. It really isn't. It isn't racist. It just isn't funny. It's not. It's not something where you're pointing out someone's character flaws. For instance, you know, it's like I like to post memes when Hillary Clinton says, we all need to be more less civil to each other." And then 3 days later, after there's an incident, after somebody gets killed or attacked. Then she says, we need to be more civil. It's like posting a meme about that, a joke about that, is a good thing because it points out the obvious character flaw. Posting about color of somebody's skin or whatnot, and I'm not talking about racism. That's not where I'm coming from. I'm talking about an irresponsibility with your posts. I was looking at this guy's van, which had all kinds of things staged. CNN sucks, had a crosshairs, people like Michael Moore and things like that. And I said to myself, these are all kinds of memes that I would probably delete from my Facebook page, right? Now, I'm not suggesting that what was on these memes or whatever suggests that someone would be a bomber or an assassin or dangerous or mentally ill. Not at all, okay? But at the same time, you have to think, you say to yourself, if this is a kind of person who drives up in a van like that or does that, somebody I want to avoid. Does CNN suck? Yeah. Just do I say on this show quite a bit, CNN sucks? Oh, yeah. Because they're irresponsible with their journalism, because they're stating their facts all wrong, because they post edited videos of the president that don't represent what he actually says. And then they have the nerve, after they post it, to post a retraction a day later or even hours later and then act like they didn't do damage to the narrative, that this isn't causing dissension. But that has to be mentioned too. It's not something that you can post in a meme, and certainly not on these on this van guy's van stickers. I was looking at it. I go, oh my God, some of this stuff is, you know, completely over the top, all right? Then I hear newscasters report, and this is what I'm going to point out when we talk about not accepting responsibility. Journalists have a responsibility, too, to journalism, to fact-based reporting, to reporting the truth. And the media is terrible about reporting the truth. Oh, they report facts, but they don't report the truth. Most of it's biased and slanted. And I'm watching the news reports on this guy, Sayoc. And they constantly refer to the pictures on his van. And they constantly say, well, he drove around in this white van covered with right-wing stickers. Those are not right-wing stickers. Those are hate stickers. Right-wing stickers, like government should be less involved in your life, conservatism, smaller government, lower taxes, that was not posted on the stickers. There was all kinds of things like crosshairs on people. And, you know, things that are not funny. Things that are just insightful. Now, he has every right to do so. Those stickers would not encourage any normal person toward an act of violence. But I'm offended when journalists report it as right-wing stickers or extremist right-wing stickers. Well, wait a minute. Those are not right-wings. They're just hate. That's not something that's either left or right wing. You know, the Alexandria shooter, you know, they don't report this, but he had bumper stickers all over his car too. Things like crosshairs on Donald Trump's head, things like that. They don't report it too much because at the time it wasn't relevant. They didn't report it as left-wing stickers. They reported as political stickers, political bumper stickers. That's where you see things where they're not reporting the truth. And that's where journalists are not taking their responsibility in what happened in this whole affair. Yesterday's show, I talked about it extensively. And the media is responsible in part for their behavior and what happened. They have ginned up, in an effort to get ratings, they have ginned up this hatred, this blind hatred of Trump. Did you know they're actually trying to blame Trump in a part for the synagogue shooting? Well, it was a dog whistle, the white supremacy. Donald Trump has repeatedly spoken against white supremacy, anti-Semitism. It's completely ridiculous to say that Donald Trump is a racist in any stretch of the imagination. Nobody suggested Donald Trump was a racist when they were all going to him for money and they were taking pictures with him. Many black leaders have taken pictures smiling side by side with John. Everything was okay until he became president. Suddenly he became a racist. Suddenly he became a white supremacist. He has specifically said, I have nothing to do with David Duke. I have nothing to do with the KKK. He has spoken against anti-Semitism. He has been referred to by Israel as one of the strongest U.S. presidents on the side of Israel, on the side of Judaism. And yet, the mainstream media consistently misreports the news. They are responsible too. And they refuse to take their responsibility as well. They refuse to accept that they are responsible in some part for what happened, if you're going to say that the president is responsible. Now, my attitude is the shooter's the only person responsible for what happened. He is the only person responsible for sending those explosive devices. And anybody who espouses violence as a solution, they are the sole person responsible. The shooter in the synagogue shooting, the Pittsburgh shooter, he is the sole person responsible, not Louis Farrakhan or anyone else. But if you're going to say that Donald Trump is somehow responsible, or his language somehow contributed to, well, then the journalists need to take some responsibility too. They need to say, we're in part responsible because we're in part contributing to the false narrative that the president is a racist in the present. And that's where we're failing as a society. The lack of education. You know, there was an article I posted to Facebook. Sullenberger Sully. You know, the guy who landed the plane on the Hudson River? And he was talking about a number of things. And it really was an argument for the left wing, in part. I mean, when you read the article and his extensive statements. But he did point out something that is very accurate. The main problem in society is the lack of proper education about civics, about the role and understanding of leadership, about what you're supposed to be responsible for as a representative, as a senator, as a president. And you have to understand your role as a leader. When Donald Trump talks as president of the United States, he is also talking to the people on the left. This is why I could never run for political office, right? I'm too partisan. I'm way too partisan. And when you take control of a district as a representative or as a state, as a senator or as president of, you are president of both the people on the left and on the right. Now, that doesn't mean you have to compromise in principle. But you need to be circumspect about how you say things and what you do. It's like Kristen Sinema. She's under a lot of heat, deservedly, for some of the things that she said. They are completely partisan. She referred to Arizona in less than savory terms. And she was a representative of a district here in Phoenix, Arizona. She's a member of Congress. She needs to be careful what she says. There were people in her district, both right and left wing. There are people in this state, right and left wing. You need to be a representative of them too. And Sullenberger was correct in his saying of his education, of his understanding of what your responsibilities are. You know, it's okay for you and I to say, media is an enemy of the people. Hey, those fucking guys, you know, blah, 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 over a brat, you know, over a barbecue on a Sunday. It's a little different when the president does it. The president has a bully pulpit that he speaks from. And we'll talk about that at the end of the show because I want to talk about that in reference to Obamacare and group health insurance. Because we don't have health insurance anymore. We have state-sponsored health care. And I don't think people understand the significance of that. And the main reason why we have Obamacare, a quote-unquote state-sponsored health care, that's the way I'm going to start referring it to because that's what it is. The main reason we have that is no one accepts responsibility for themselves. No one is educated on the role and responsibility of what your responsibilities as a member of society are. And we need to discuss that because Obamacare is becoming a thing that the left is starting to pound home in the short few days before the election. And people are starting to side with the left on this and they don't realize what they are doing. Because they don't take responsibility for themselves. They don't take responsibility for their own health. They don't take responsibility for their own bills. It's not insurance anymore. Health insurance is not insurance. It's a handout. Let's talk about that. We'll be right back after this brief break. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at Patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to LibertyNeverSleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. You know, I'm so tired of things being misrepresented. Like Sullenberger says, the lack of and the failure of our education really is. We're not teaching kids anything. They can't educate a single soul. I mean, kids that are graduating from high school can't read and write. I mean, you should be able to read and write graduation from middle school, right? Eighth grade? I think that's where it is. Can't read and write. And don't tell me they can. They pass the literacy test. That's not what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. They can't spell. They can't make a coherent sentence or a coherent statement. Our education system is a complete and utter failure. Absolutely. It's one of the worst in the world. That's why we're producing rows and rows of morons who vote on the left wing. Because if you're educated, for the most part, if you're educated about the way government works, about civics, about civic pride, which they never teach anymore, you would understand the difference between an entitlement and a benefit that taxes pay, the understanding of the dangers of socialism. You would understand all those things. Now, you can make, as a functioning adult, a decision on that. You can be left-wing or be liberal or believe in these programs. But most of the people that do are completely not educated about what that program or what that concept is. That's the failure. They're liberal because they think it's a cool thing. Because they don't have something, they want something from government. All the young people that are out there, and when I talk young people, I talk below 40. When they say they're a liberal or they say healthcare is a right, you have a right to someone else's labor, all of these things, you'll find that almost to a man, you'll find that they have very little understanding of what things are. What is health insurance? Most people under the age of 40 do not understand the concept of health insurance. They think it's a way to fund or finance your health care. It's not what health insurance is at all. Health insurance is a transfer of risk. There is no transfer of risk anymore. No, really. When you think about it, almost everyone has a subsidized plan of insurance in some manner. It is no longer a function of private industry. It's a function of a quasi-private industry with government help. It's really fascism. Fascism as an economic model is government control of an industry. The health insurance industry is controlled and financed by government. Every part of it. There isn't a single part of health insurance that's insurance anymore. It's not a transfer of risk. It's not a transfer of risk when everybody's health becomes everybody's problem. The big thing that the left is talking about is pre-existing conditions. Well, we can't get rid of pre-existing conditions. The Republicans are on the same side as that. Why not? Why is somebody's heart problem my problem? And I know that sounds harsh, but there are ways that we could pool all of the people with health problems into a single pool. There's a lot of them. Almost everybody has health problems. I have a health problem. If I want to apply under health insurance, just speaking from my own experience, if I was to try and get health insurance on my own without help from Obamacare or this new system we have of government-sponsored health insurance, I would be unable to get it. I have a pre-existing condition, a fatal one. If I don't get my health care on a regular basis, I will die. I have a condition that is continually attacking my body. It's something I was born with, something I didn't become aware of until I was later in life, something that actually affected my life early on and I didn't know it. I don't expect anyone else to pay for my problems. If you were to say to me, Tom, they are taking away pre-existing conditions clause, you now have to buy health insurance on your own, I'm in big trouble. But I don't expect society to pay for my problem. There are ways to deal with it. We used to do with it in a very simple way. Everybody who has these pre-existing conditions, who is uninsurable, falls into two categories. This is the way we used to do it before government-sponsored health care. You can go into a Medicare system where these are conditions that you can't. You are a ward of society. We're talking about major heart conditions, stroke, AIDS, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. These are people who have a fatal condition and they're limited in their lifespan. That is something that's an obligation of society. We have to do that as a civilized society. Otherwise, you got all kinds of horrible things going on, people dropping dead in the street. Nobody wants that. Donald Trump said that. Well, nobody wants that. Every society in the world does that, from the village in Africa all the way up to a modern westernized city. You take care of your elders. You take care of people who are sick and unable to fend for themselves, unable to fight. But then we have people, which is the vast majority of people with pre-existing conditions, high blood pressure, cancer. These things put an enormous risk on insurance companies. If you've had cancer in the past, the likelihood of cancer returning, if you've had in about a 15-year span, is pretty high. Despite what your doctors tell you about being in remission or, quote unquote, we got it all, you could get cancer again, and it's likely you will. So the risk to insurance company of a massive bill, $2, $3 million, is sky high, at least in the old system. And so we would take all those people and say to them, okay, look, you can buy into a pool of insurance called a guaranteed insurance policy. We're going to fund your health care. We're going to spread the cost of your health care bills over a group of people, all of the people like you, all of the people with pre-existing conditions, everybody from the high blood pressure person all the way up to the cancer patient. We're going to spread all that money out. In other words, your $3 million is matched against the guy with $30,000, against the guy with $3,000, and against the guy with $30 million. And we're going to pull all of you together and spread it out. And so you're the ones who have to bear the burden of your problem. It's your problem. You got to pay for it. Those policies were expensive. They were real health insurance policies. They paid for your pre-existing conditions. They paid for your lab visits. They paid for your doctor's office visits. They were actually a higher benefits than most basic insurance policies. Low deductibles, basic costs covered, but they were expensive. And when I was selling this was about 8 years ago, before Obamacare. When I was selling them, they ran about $1,500 a month. But that was expensive. Still is. But it was your problem, and you paid for it. Now, everybody else who's healthy, doesn't have pre-existing conditions, or did something to protect themselves and insulate, exercise, eat well, that kind of thing, and we're healthy, basically go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, you're fine, see you next year, that kind of thing. You bought insurance, real insurance, where you shared the burden of your healthcare costs alone. Those were less expensive, $200 to $300 a month, depending on person. Typically, I told people they go up 15% a year. That was the average. It was going up radically because why? Well, because healthcare was going up. They could treat anything and everything. They had a medication for everything. Modern medicine is a wonderful thing. That's the way our old system worked. It was a transfer of risk. In other words, you had a risk of potentially getting ill, and you pass it to the insurance company in exchange for them giving you money, or you giving them money. In other words, you're going to pay a little bit every time, and since the risk to the insurance company is low, it's spread amongst all you people. And this is why you didn't give up your health insurance, no matter what. We had laws for it. If you left your job and it was group-sponsored health care, which was the worst idea ever, whoever came up with the idea originally, I don't know who it was, where your insurance is tied to your job, which is a terrible idea. If you left your job, they would give you a letter. And when the letter says guaranteed insurability, it meant you were healthy when you left your job. You take that letter to your next employer or health care plan, you say here, and you're automatically covered on that health care plan. Great system. People ignored it, by and large. I'll just get insurance when I get a job. I can't pay for insurance now. COBRA is too expensive. Well, COBRA was only the price that you and your employer were sharing for your health care costs. It was never higher by law. In other words, if you got a bill for COBRA that was $800 a month, that's because you were paying $400 a month and your employer was paying $400 a month. Employer shared costs on health insurance were one of the reasons why health insurance was going price up, because the insurance companies, though, they could double dip. They could get the employer to pay and they could get the consumer to pay. That's why it's a bad system. And then when you left, you got socked with the huge bill and people didn't pay it. But they ignored that little letter. You get that letter. This is your letter of guaranteed insurability. Crumple up, throw in the trash, because they didn't know what it was. They didn't realize how important that was. Then they go to get health insurance, and the insurer asks, "Cole, well, let me have your letter." "What letter?" "Well, letter of guaranteed insurability." "I don't have that letter." And now it's too late to get it. Nobody was taking responsibility for themselves. Then there were people with pre-existing conditions that had health insurance, left their job. They dropped their insurance, even though they were sick, even though they had pre-existing conditions, even though they had cancer 5 years ago, or were currently a cancer patient. They dropped their insurance. "I can't afford it. I can't afford it. I can't afford it." Meanwhile, they got a mortgage in the house and a car and a house cell phone paying $500 a month. "I can't afford it." Okay. But that's your responsibility. You accepted that risk. You're no longer transferring that risk to an insurance company. And people didn't accept responsibility for that. So, and the insurance companies knew it. And jacked up rates. If money is there to pay for it, they got it. That's how it worked in a free market system. And so everyone got screwed, basically, because of their own irresponsibility. People would get higher and higher and higher deductibles instead of cutting back in their lifestyle. And as a result, the insurance companies jacked rates up even further because people were willing to live with it. It's like, you know, it's like you people bitch and moan about airplanes, flight, right? "Oh, it's terrible. Conditions are terrible. Packed in like sardines." Well, that's because you don't want to pay for it. Everyone always buys what way? Lowest available rate. What's the cheapest flight I can get from point A to point B? What's coach? You know, the front of the plane gets there the same as the back of the plane. Yeah, but in the front of the plane, you're more comfortable. That's why airline travel is so horrible, because you don't want to pay for it. Same thing with the health insurance. Nobody wanted to pay for it. So Obama comes along and he goes, "Hey, you have a right to cheap health insurance. You have a right to health care. You have a right to somebody else's labor." "I do?" "Oh, yeah. That's not right. It's not right that you have a health insurance bill that costs more than your cell phone bill. Remember that? Oh, it's not right. It's not fair. Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, we can pay for it. We can share that cost. Everybody pays a little. And then that way your rates will go down. Remember this whole conversation? And you could keep your doctor. All you got to do is say yes to government control of everything in your life. Great. Sign me up." That's why he got elected. That's why Obamacare went through. And then once everybody had that coming in, everybody got comfortable with it. Everyone, you know, the world didn't end, right? The planes didn't fall out of the sky. Buildings didn't fall over. We had group health insurance or government-sponsored health insurance, and everybody's happy. You can get insurance anytime you want, except it's not insurance anymore. It's not a transfer of risk. You're paying for everybody's bill. So guess what happens? Bill goes up. enormously. It went up more than 15% a year. And worse, in order to keep it affordable for people, in other words, you, the average consumer, get socked with these $2,000, $3,000 bills per month for your family, what do you do? What do you do? You call your insurance agent. What can you do? Well, we can increase your deductible. We can increase your deductible to $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. People are walking around with quote-unquote insurance policies with $20,000, $10,000 deductibles. Maximum out-of-pocket, $30,000. Can you afford $30,000? I can't. That's an act of irresponsibility. And then when you get socked with a bill, hey, how come I'm getting a bill for $30,000? How come my insurance is not paying for it? Well, you signed up for the plan. That's what you're paying for. Well, that's not right. Well, I know it's not right. It sucks. But it's going to get worse the more you ask for government to get involved. Because an insurance company is only going to charge what the market will bear. Because what happens if they charge more than the market will bear? Well, then they go out of business because nobody buys the product, right? It's just like anything else in a private marketplace. So when you say to government, I want my government to pay for my medical bills. I want them to pay for my lab fees. I want them to pay for my office visits, which every policy by law now does. Guess what happens? Guess what happens to the price of your typical doctor's office visit? Goes through the roof because the insurance companies now, you're not paying for it. There's no free market controls. And now the insurance companies are saying to these doctors, hey, you know what? We're paying out too much on this. So you know what? Make sure your nurse practitioner instead of your doctor does your physicals, because now there's everybody going to the doctor's office every 6 months for an office visit. So they got to do something. They're getting less and less money on the inside, and they're getting more and more people in their waiting room. What do you do? Well, the quality of healthcare goes down. You're getting less qualified people, and you're processing people at a faster rate in order to handle a volume. Medical care malpractice suits are through the roof. More people are dying from malpractice, in other words, doctors' mistakes, than they are of many major diseases. It's one of the leading causes of death in the United States. And for the last 2 years in a row, our life expectancy in this country is actually going down. Everybody supposedly has health insurance now. Everybody supposedly can go to a doctor whenever they want. Everybody's got their office visits and their lab tests paid for free. For free. Everyone's getting a handout. Everybody's used to it. Everybody's comfortable with it. But we're dying as a result. We signed up for something that's killing us. And worse, it's killing us in horrible ways. Doctors are prescribing what? Pain meds all the time. Because remember, there's this law that the doctors have to address your pain issues right away. When you go to a doctor's office, what is the first thing they ask you? Are you in pain? Here you go. Here's a bottle of opioids. Because that's the way the pharmaceutical companies are making a mint. And you take it home and you take the pill and you go, oh, I feel so much better. Thanks, doc. They never address what's actually causing the pain. And you take these things, and then the doctor says, hey, wow, you're taking too much of this med. Yeah, the med doesn't work as much anymore. I need more. And that's how you get addicted. And then the doctor says, well, the new federal regulations say I can't prescribe more than 30 pills in 30 days. I can't prescribe more than this medication per day. You're going to have to suffer. I do. Oh, that ain't going to happen. I'm addicted to it now. So what do? You go to the local dealer. Hey, can I get an extra bottle of Vicodin? Oh, sure. Here you go. Wow, that's pretty cheap. Give me a whole bunch. And people get further and further addicted. People get sicker and sicker and sicker. The waiting rooms fill up with people with more and more problems. And your taxes go up and the national debt goes through the roof. That's what's happening, folks. That's what government healthcare. And then at some point, because nobody wants to say to people, hey, listen, you need to pay your own bills. You need to be responsible for yourself. And I'm sorry, that sucks, but that's the way it is, man. Life sucks. Life ain't fair. Nobody wants to tell them that. Leaders don't want to tell them that. No one is acting responsible as a leader. And so now you go, well, that sucks. I'm addicted to these drugs. The doctors got me hooked. I can't get proper medical care. Something has got to give. So what happens is what? You start screaming as the people. And government says the only thing that government can do. Well, you know what the problem is? It's all of these pharmaceutical companies. It's all of these doctors. They're all getting rich. Everybody's driving Mercedes. Pharmaceutical companies. We got to seize the health insurance industry. It's coming. Because the leadership doesn't want to tell you the truth. The leadership doesn't want to tell you you've got to be responsible for yourself. You can't live in that big house. You can't drive those fancy cars. You can't have those $500 a month cell phone bills with Wi-Fi everywhere. You can't have that Starbucks anymore. You got a healthcare problem. You got to deal with it. And because nobody is responsible, the price goes up and up and up and up and through the roof because the insurance company keeps getting money from government. This bottomless pit. Taxpayer funds it. Your taxes pay for it. And they've created their own problem because nobody wants to get rid of it. Nobody has the courage to say to people, you need to be responsible for yourself. It's a hard thing. That's why being a Republican is so hard. Because you got to tell people it's going to cost you. Let's talk about that next. We'll be right back. And we're back. You know, when you accept a handout in any way, food stamps, Obama phones, Obamacare, it's a terrible word, Obama phone. It's really not. It's a government program. I've had it for years. When you have all these things, you become dependent on it. And when government has you by the balls like that, by the short hairs, you don't want to give it up. I've had this phone for years. What do you mean I got to pay for my own phone? What do you mean I got to pay for my own food? But dependency and handouts actually have a certain ameliorating effect to revolution. If we didn't have food stamps, if we didn't have all of these social programs, there probably would have been a revolution long ago in this country. Honest to God. People are upset now. You can imagine how upset they'd be when they have no food on the table because government doesn't give them money anymore. Government doesn't give them food. Government doesn't give them a phone. That one of two things. You'd have a revolution one of two ways. People start throwing their leaders out. That's one way. Either by voting or by violence, if it came to that. Or they get up and get a job that nobody wants. There are tons of jobs on Monster.com. Or if you go to any recruiting office, lots of jobs. They're just jobs nobody wants. Nobody wants to sell insurance. Nobody wants to clean toilets. Nobody wants to push a broom. Nobody wants to be a salesman. They desperately need salesmen, good ones. Can't get them. Nobody wants to do it. Everyone wants the career, sitting in the cubicle, nice, comfortable job with a little potted plant, a little picture, where you get a paycheck for doing nothing but pushing papers from one side of the office to the other. Those jobs are rare, unless you work for government. Then that's every government job. That's what everyone wants. Everyone wants to be dependent on someone else for their problems. They don't want to worry about anything. They just want a paycheck and go home. I could understand that. I could appreciate that. I'm not faulting people for wanting that. But you understand that there's a cost to that. The cost is what everybody should be focused on, but they're not. They're focused on the price. And let me explain. Everyone is concerned about their health insurance bills, and rightly so. They're going up through the roof. Something has to be done. I say return it to the private marketplace. Go back to a health insurance system and a healthcare system that we had in the 40s and the 50s, where everybody paid their own way, when doctors had to fight to compete for your money. They didn't drive Mercedes, did they? Uh-uh. They walked out to your house, a little black bag, if they had to get the business. We need to go back to that system, free market system. course, the doctors won't be happy about it. They'll have to compete for business. They'll have to post prices. Pharmaceutical companies won't like it either. And there probably won't be as the quality of the care. That's the cost of that system. But everyone's focused on the price, how much my insurance bill is. They're not focused on the cost. They don't realize that the reason your prices at the pump and the prices on the in your grocery cart and the prices of your apartment or home are reflective of the price of the cost of health insurance. And I go, what do you mean, Tom? Take an example. Where is the cost of living? That's what I'm talking about. Where is it the highest? Where does it cost the most to live? San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, the bluest of blue cities and the bluest of blue states, right? Where is it low? Alabama, reddest of red states, reddest of red cities, Texas. Texas is going up now because so many people are going there and so many businesses, because that has an effect too. Arizona, not that many people want to live here. The weather is tough. It's not as pretty as California. You don't make as much money. That's the cost, not the price. The reason prices go up and the reason a house in Fremont is $1.2 million for a 1,500 square foot shack is because of the cost of things. They pay higher wages, so naturally, people who own houses can sell them for more money. Taxes are much higher. Everything costs more because government gives you things. There is no place better than California and San Francisco to get free things from government. Man, the list is endless. There's no place with more regulations, no place with higher taxes. Great. Socialist utopia. Except the house is $1.2 million. And you live like a peasant. That's the cost of it. But the price is low. Wow, I get free phones, I get free food, I get free housing, Section 8 housing, all that good stuff. Good. Wow. Free, free, free. But it's a $1.2 million living 1,500 square foot house. But it's $4 a gallon at the gas pump. And people don't make that connection and don't realize that's what's causing it. That's why I love watching House Hunter so much, because it gives me an idea of how people think and how people live in certain communities. Two doctors in New York were buying a home, 900 square foot home, $1.2 million, and they couldn't even afford that. If I was living in that situation, I'd say, hon, we need to get the hell out of this town. I can't afford to live here. But these people didn't do that. You know what they, you know what their thinking was as they were discussing it with the narrator and stuff? Oh, the cost of living is going up. We don't know what the problem is. Well, the problem is you keep voting in people like Obama. And they don't make the connection. They don't make the connection that they're asking for all this stuff. They're not responsible for themselves. Well, there's a price to that pay. Have you ever borrowed money from somebody? A lot of money. I'm not talking about $5 from your buddy to pay for lunch. I'm talking about like, oh, I'm in trouble. I need $5,000. Well, there's a price to that. They start questioning your decisions about your finance. They start telling you things. When you borrow money from a bank, they have a certain amount of power over you, don't they? When you borrow on your house, if you take a second mortgage, for instance, that's about the largest loan you can get. You take a second mortgage on a house, let's say, to do things, there's a price that you owe that. They could take your house. There's a consequence. It's the same thing with government. When you say, I want free health insurance, I want them to cover my pre-existing conditions. Okay, we'll do it. You voted it in. You got it. There's a price to it. I need to understand that. That's not free. It's not just paying for it. There's a consequence of the loss of freedom. You no longer have the freedom to buy from whatever company you want. You can't live wherever you want either. Maybe you need a certain doctor and certain thing. There's a loss of freedom there and a loss of liberty. People forget that because they're not educated at the school level. What are the hazards of socialism? Yeah, you have certain benefits. They always talk about the benefits of socialism, don't they? Oh, you got a universal health care. That's great. Oh, you got universal food. We got food stamps. They're always talking about in certain cities, well, we're going to give you a minimum wage, guaranteed minimum wage by government. Great. Except there's a price to it too, isn't there? You have to live with all the other stuff. You have to live with the $1.2 million for a 1,500 square foot house, as I've pointed out. You have to live with the $4 and $5 gas, and you don't make that connection that there's a price to this. A loss of freedom, a loss of liberty, a loss of being able to do anything. Because when you have to pay a mortgage on a $1.2 million house to live just as a peasant, when you have a loss of freedom, you have to take your job. When you have a high unemployment rate, there's no freedom to leave for another job where your boss isn't such an asshole. You get stuck at the job. Well, I have to stay with this job because my health insurance with this job, and somebody else doesn't have a group health plan that covers with my doctor and this. You've lost your freedom. You're shackled by your own decision making. And then people never make that connection. That's why I always say you have to understand there's a cost to everything and a price. And people in America are focused on the price of things rather than on cost of things. I'd rather earn less money and have more freedom. That's why I worked for myself for the last, I don't know how many years. I won't go back. I can't go back. I'm too used to the freedoms I have. I can say and do whatever I want. I take care of my own health insurance. Well, in certain cases I'm part of a program because I have a very, very rare condition that pays for some of my health insurance costs because they want to study me. Yeah. I loss of freedom too. I have to go to their clinics and I have to, subject myself to their tests. That I've lost some freedom too, but I live with it. I'm not willing to live with the freedoms that I have accumulated over the year by working for myself. And that's a rare thing. How many stories have you seen where somebody is in like an Uber and they do something really dumb, like they get really drunk and they say all kinds of offensive things? Why? I thought we lived in America and I could be free to do that. I could be free to be an asshole. How many of those people you see get fired from their job the next day? The public scrutiny, the hammering people take. If you worked for yourself, that's not an issue, right? But you're working for XYZ company and so you get fired. Now you've lost your income. You've lost maybe your health insurance. You've lost all your benefits. You've put your family at risk. Your freedom has been put at risk by your freedom of speech. People never make that connection. There's a price to everything and a cost to everything. And the cost is what we need to be more focused on. Let's talk a little bit about President Trump's tweets because it all goes back to what we started with about taking responsibility for oneself. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. One last word before we close. I only got a couple minutes left. The president has an enormous amount of freedom with what he says from what's called the bully pulpit. When you speak from the president's podium, it carries a lot of power and influence. With power comes responsibility. You have to understand that when you're president for everybody, both left and right. I really like Donald Trump. I like his policies. I think he's done great things for this country. I want to see him continue as president for a full 8 years. I'm going to say that straight off. But man, he is a really bad communicator. He says things on the fly the way you and I would. Media are a bunch of jackasses. CNN sucks. Enemy of the people. Media is the enemy of the people. It's one thing if you or I are saying it. It's another thing if the president says it. One of the greatest communicators we ever had in the presidency was Ronald Reagan. You know why? Not because he wasn't conservative. My God, he was, in many cases, further right than Donald Trump was. He was an effective communicator. He could say things in a humorous, light way and make his point. I remember when Walter Mondale was making an issue of Ronald Reagan's age, and he said to Walter Mondale in debates, famous statement, he says, well, I won't make too much, if Mr. Mondale won't make too much of my age, I won't make too much of his relative youth and inexperience. He effectively belittled Walter Mondale. That's what he was doing. Belittled the argument. But he did it in an effective and humorous way. Donald Trump hasn't learned that skill. He's a very brusque, he's a very frank, blunt talker. He's from New York. I understand it completely. I understand what he's doing. In some ways, he does it to provoke, too. But the thing is, when he says things from the bully pulpit, you have to understand it takes on a different connotation. When I say, oh boy, those guys at CNN are jackasses, they're an enemy of the people, that's one thing. But when the president says it, it takes on a different context, doesn't it? Has more power. It would be better for him to say, you know what? The New York Times has hired somebody who is partisan and extreme in the comments and reports on stories and posts stories that is both unfair to me and the American people. That would be a better way to say it. That would be less divisive. And more importantly, it would put people like the New York Times and their editorial board on the carpet for what they've said. And do so in a non-divisive manner that appeals both to the left and right. That's the power of the what's called the bully pulpit, the podium that he speaks from. That's a more effective way to communicate. Now, I don't make as much big deal as what the left does, because the left is upset that it's hurting them. That's why they're upset. That's why they're upset at Donald Trump saying all the things that he does and tweeting out all the things that he does, because he's very effective at communicating and being in touch with the frustrations of the American people with the unfairness and the irresponsibility of most of the mainstream reporting news. And he is true when he says, enemy of the people, blah, blah, blah. But you got to understand, he is talking both to the left and right. And that is a powerful tool to accomplish things. And calling the media from that podium an enemy of the people doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't accomplish what you want. What do you want? You want the media to be more responsible in their journalism and responsible in their reporting and be less opinionated and less biased, both toward the presidency and the United States of the America. That's what you want. That's what you want to accomplish as president. But it's having just the opposite effect. They get even more hostile, naturally. They call out, oh, he's responsible for this shooting and this journalism, and he's a racist, and he's this, and he's that. And the friction gets worse. Journalism attacks, the media attacks the president attacks back, and the American people start taking sides. That's what's going on. And so, you know, you can criticize the president. And not think he's a bad guy. I'm going to vote for him. Man, I love the guy. I think he's a great president. I think he's right what America needed most after Barack Obama, after 8 years of that and 8 years of Bush, which in some ways was just as bad. But at the same time, I'd like to see him be a better president, a better leader of everybody instead of just a leader of the right wing. Instead of a leader of the common man, be a leader of everybody. Take some responsibility for yourself as president. I'd like to see him do that. I don't know if he ever will, because he's getting nastier too. I mean, yesterday when he said enemy of the people, I was like, oh. But I live with it. I'm willing to accept it because it's nearly not as bad as the left says it is. The reason, as I said, the reason the left is angry is because why? Because he's very effective. Their ratings are down. They take it on the chin constantly in social media, as they should. But don't never forget, the president is the president of everyone. And using the bully pulpit, you know, like a little kid wielding a hammer, is not effective. That's why I loved, that's why Ronald Reagan, I think, was probably one of the best presidents since Abraham Lincoln. Not for his politics, but for his ability to communicate. That's why they called him the great communicator. Now, maybe because he was an actor or experienced, but he had an effective way of communicating his ideas and getting the left wing to agree with him. That's something that we really desperately need in a president right now. We need someone that's not so divisive. And that's not a good thing for a president to be divisive. It's okay for Rush Limbaugh or me or somebody else to be divisive. That's our job. The president's job should be to bring a country together. And we've had, I mean, literally 16 years of presidents that have done just the opposite. Barack Obama was one of the most divisive presidents in U.S. history for a lot of reasons, which we don't have time. I'm way over. Bush was divisive in his own ways, the number of things that he said, number of things that he did. We need a Ronald Reagan again, not just the politics, but somebody that's less divisive in the way they talk and the way we need an effective communicator. Because Donald Trump's ideas are the best I've heard in 30 years. He's just not effective at communicating them. A good speechwriter would help him a lot. You know, I've reached out. You know, they're not going to pay attention to me. But somebody like a Rush Limbaugh or somebody, they need to write his speeches. His speeches. What he says. He just jumps off the cuff quite a bit. And I don't know if that's going to change. But we're way over. I'm sorry. We're out of time. Tomorrow is Halloween. We'll talk a little bit about Halloween issues. It's a little bit lighter episode. And then we'll be back Thursday. Just a reminder, Thanksgiving week, no show Thursday, Friday. Private show Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, public show. Take care, folks. Have a good one.
Point out the colors of you, I see them too, and boy, I like them, I like them, I like them. We're way too fly to partake in all this hate. We out here vibing, we vibing, we vibing.
Alexa, play Ariana Grande.
Okay.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.